This is All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm Melissa Block. The Cold War is long over, and many of the leading warriors on both sides are fading from memory. Today, commentator Walter Cronkite recalls one of the era's most powerful and puzzling characters, the man who, as leader of the Soviet Union from 1956 to 64, fascinated, charmed, and terrified Americans, Nikita Khrushchev.
With the 1964 election barely 2 weeks away, the country was handed an October surprise that neither Lyndon Johnson nor Barry Goldwater expected, and that almost no one could quite believe. It was mid-afternoon on a Thursday. In our new news quarters in the West Side, we were busy assembling the CBS Evening News for air at 6:30. Mostly it was routine stories about a presidential campaign whose outcome had not been in serious doubt since the conventions. It was about 3 hours to airtime when the first teletype reached my desk. The network was in the middle of a panel show called To Tell the Truth, but this was a story that could not wait 3 hours. Within minutes, I was on the air with this.
Companion product to Twinkle Cream for Silver.
Here is a bulletin from CBS News. United Press International, quoting reliable sources in Moscow, reports that Nikita Khrushchev has been removed from leadership of the Soviet Union. UPI says that he was voted out of office because of age and that his posts as premier and first secretary...
If the sudden shock of that bulletin seems a little puzzling to you today, then perhaps you never knew the world of the Cold War at its height. If all that was before your time, you may find it hard to understand the extent to which Soviet Premier Nikita Khrushchev once loomed over America. He threatened, he menaced, he provoked, and he threw the nuclear weight of the Soviet Union around with equal measures of playfulness and peril. There was hardly a CBS Evening News I did during those years in which his name did not somehow figure in a major lead story. And now, in one astonishing and unexpected stroke, the most feared man in America for almost a decade was out of the picture.
Repeating this bulletin, United Press International, quoting reliable sources, says that Nikita Khrushchev has been removed as leader of the Soviet nation. This bulletin has come to you from CBS News.
For 800 years, the Kremlin had lived up to its name, which translates into English as fortress. Insulated from the West by a combination of language, geography, and a pervasive suspicion of outsiders, Russian leaders had hunkered down behind its barricades for centuries. During most of that time, few Americans had reason to care. That was a luxury that expired with the Second World War and the post-war world. When we took notice, most Americans saw Russia as a vast secret society, none more so than the handful of American correspondents who actually covered the Soviet Union from Moscow. From 1946 through 1948, I was one of them. For a relatively young United Press newsman, it was a remarkable place. Intrigue, secrecy, and conspiracy were everywhere. If Soviet officials feared one thing more than outsiders, it was each other. No one trusted anyone. The closest I ever came to Joseph Stalin was watching him review troops in Red Square or officiate at the opening of the Supreme Soviet. He never held a press conference. Most Americans would never hear the sound of his voice. After Stalin's death in 1953, Kremlin readings grew even more elusive. By 1955, real power had narrowed to two men, Nikolai Buganin, who headed the government, and Nikita Khrushchev, who headed the party. For a period, they seemed to travel and work as a team. But it was Khrushchev who would denounce Stalin in 1956. It was Khrushchev who would expel his rivals from the party's Central Committee in June 1957. And it was Khrushchev who would choose precisely that moment to talk directly to the American people in an unprecedented television interview.
This is the office of Nikita Khrushchev. Mr. Khrushchev, we're very grateful to you for allowing us to come here. We have many questions that we want to put to you through your interpreter. And
for months, Dan Shore, who was then Moscow bureau chief for CBS, had been seeking an on-camera interview with either Buganin or Khrushchev. On a Sunday morning in early June, America tuned in to Face the Nation. It saw the smiling, jovial face of its arch-enemy, Nikita Khrushchev, predicting with a benevolent certainty the future of its grandchildren. Prime Minister Buchanan was nowhere in sight.
And I can prophesy that your grandchildren in America will live under socialism. And please don't be afraid of that. Your grandchildren will not understand how their grandparents did not understand the progressive nature of a socialist society.
Within a year, Buchanan would be out, and Khrushchev would add his job to his own. He would soon bask in the prestige of Russian Sputniks, and later leverage that prestige in hot spots such as Berlin and Havana. But before those difficult times began, Khrushchev would show a more jolly face in an unprecedented stroke of diplomatic ingenuity, a visit to the United States.
Good evening, I'm Walter Cronkite, and this is the Sunday News Special. Soviet Premier Khrushchev arrives here Tuesday, and he'll be wearing a huge new feather in his cap. A Soviet rocket hits the moon. In Moscow, it was 2 minutes after midnight, and at that time, the Moscow radio gleefully broadcast the news, and crowds in the streets that had been waiting for the word went wild. From London and Washington...
That September of 1959, fresh from another Russian space triumph, Khrushchev touched down at Andrews Air Force Base in a giant Soviet turbojet. But the diplomatic breakthroughs of the Khrushchev visit would be modest compared to those the event would bring to CBS News. America's first look at a bona fide dictator in person was too big a story for CBS's paltry 15-minute evening newscast. So a brilliant producer in the special reports unit named Les Midgley was assigned to coordinate expanded coverage. His format would be a series of nightly documentaries under the title Eyewitness to History, a series that I would anchor. Using new technologies such as videotape, Les cut documentary production time from months to hours. For CBS News, the Khrushchev tour was truly a groundbreaking event.
Eyewitness to History, brought to you by Firestone. This is Walter Cronkite. In a moment, a complete eyewitness report on Khrushchev in California.
In 1959, anchormen didn't pretend to cover a story. We had reporters to do that. I saw little of Khrushchev in person that week, but much of him in the reports of his barnstorming that I presented in the eyewitness programs. The first stop
on the Khrushchev tour after his Washington arrival was New York City. He rode a special train up from the Capitol, and the crowds which greeted him at Pennsylvania Station appeared not so cold as the people he saw on his first day in Washington. With reporters and photographers trailing close behind, Khrushchev the next day drove to Hyde Park to visit the grave of Franklin D. Roosevelt. He returned to New York the same
afternoon. After 35 years of Stalin and his furtive disciples, many Americans wanted desperately to like Khrushchev, and he gave them much to like. He was open, good-humored, sometimes short-tempered, often provocative. From New York, he flew on to California, where he began to break ranks with his schedule. He spoke at a formal dinner in his honor, the final scheduled event in a
momentous day in his tour of America, the final scheduled event. But no one, even his security guard, can be sure where Mr. Khrushchev is going to show up next. Exulting in a new friendliness shown him by the people of San Francisco, he's begun to tear up his schedule, to take unscheduled walks and side excursions. He's finally, after his...
In Hollywood, Khrushchev showed he could steal a scene from the best of them. At a luncheon attended by the biggest stars in show business, he put on a brilliant display of mock outrage upon learning that he could not go to Disneyland.
But just now, I was told that I couldn't go to Disneyland.
Я почему?
I asked, why not?
Может быть, там теперь ракетные площадки созданы?
What is it? Do you have
по запуску ракет?
Rocket launching pads there?
Я не знаю, да.
I don't know.
Мне говорят...
And just listen to what I was told. We, which means the American authority, cannot guarantee your security if you go there. What is it? Is there an epidemic of cholera there or something?
He was on his best behavior during the final days of affable talks with President Eisenhower at Camp David. 13 days after his arrival, he left. For the first time, America had seen a bona fide dictator close up, and could not help being slightly amused by this stocky, almost amiable curmudgeon. He left with his only English words of the trip.
Goodbye, good luck, friends.
The East-West thaw would prove illusory, of course. Ahead lay many grim times, the U-2 incident, the breakup of a long-awaited summit in 1960, more confrontations over Berlin, and the missile crisis of 1962. Khrushchev made his exit at an unexpected but appropriately convenient time. Just 8 weeks before, Congress had approved the Gulf of Tonkin resolution with only 2 dissenting votes. Our domestic obsession with the Soviet Union would soon be overtaken by a growing debate over Vietnam. Meanwhile, we were introduced to 2 new Soviet leaders. The post of first secretary of the party will be taken by Leonid Brezhnev,
and that of premier will be taken by Alexei Kosygin. CBS News Moscow correspondent Stuart Novins points out that Brezhnev was a protege of Khrushchev's in the party structure and is in Khrushchev's mold as a man who attempts to cultivate the common touch.
I still find it difficult to imagine that a man who once dominated our daily life as pervasively as Nikita Khrushchev did now, for many of us, is virtually a semi-forgotten figure. There is this, too. Unlike such enduring historic tyrants as Hitler and Stalin, Khrushchev was a man of many faces, but cautious temperament. If this has diluted his memory, it also made him, during tense times, a man with whom America could do the basic political business of survival. In the face of terrorist politics today, it seems, in retrospect, a surprisingly comfortable modus vivendi. His meetings with Eisenhower in 1959 would leave the world with an expression that still persists in the informal phrasebook of diplomacy, the spirit of Camp David, a spirit disturbingly absent today between us and our present enemies. For NPR News, this is Walter Cronkite.
Photos of Nikita Khrushchev's 1959 visit to the U.S. and previous essays by Walter Cronkite are at our website, npr.org.